Blog Talk Radio.
Nomination. Well, we know that he's dropped out quite a while ago.
No, he just dropped out 2 days ago.
Yeah, the sudden announcement is expected to be made during the official during a 6 p.m. speech in Madison, Wisconsin. The decision comes after Walker plummeted from the top of the polls to less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
So he didn't have much support. So
this was published on the 21st, which was 2 days ago. So that's when he announced it. But the sudden announcement was expected to be made.
He followed on the heels of Governor Rick Perry, who also dropped out.
Right. So anyway, we're very pleased about that. Okay. Right. And I think anybody who is now here's a guy. Here's this Robert Costa from Washington. I don't understand how I'm bringing this up because he's all over this article, which, and the guy is, he's one of these, let's not talk about it. Anyway, let's go back to Scott Walker. They didn't say too much about Scott Walker there.
I think that's probably why he dropped out of the race. There's not much to say about him.
He's a very unattractive candidate. He's hated by many folks, so.
Along with the guy who raised the price of the drugs to $500 and something, or $700 and something from $13.
Well, here's something that it says. Here's the guy. Okay, again, this idiot that did that. But there's a thing that says, hedge funders should not pay a lower tax rate than teachers. Isn't that true? Hey, thanks to the carry interest loophole, hedge fund millionaires and billionaires pay a lower tax rate than teachers. Sure, if you think this is greedy hedge funder, I'd say so. And of course, they're looking at this guy, Martin Shkreli, who should not be getting a tax break off the backs of teachers. And he's the guy that raised the, bought this pharmaceutical company and raised that pill rate from $13 for AIDS patients to $750.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable, huh? Just totally unbelievable. Now, here's something that excites me because it's kind of unusual. But Brazil has banned corporate money in elections.
Well, good for them.
Brazil court bans corporate money in politics. Isn't that great? I was very very surprised to hear that. Here's something interesting too. Why is Bernie Madoff the only Wall Street criminal to face jail time? Because he robbed the 1%, not the 99%.
Well, we knew that, right?
Most people did, but I thought it was interesting.
He had the nerve to do that.
After
I fired 30,000 workers at HP.
This is for Rena here.
And sent their jobs to China, I tripled my salary, got 5 corporate jets, and bought myself a $1 million yacht. Oh.
That's Carla Farina.
Carly Farina.
Mommy dearest. And she's a horrible, horrible nightmare of a person to see. And she'll just destroy this country if she ever gets her hands on that. Her, Hillary, I mean, it's not just a feminine thing. It's just that it just happens that the two women that are running, okay, are freaking nightmares, aren't they? I mean, Hillary is completely a nightmare, and this one is not only a nightmare; she's frightening as hell. You know, I thought she was the most scariest thing I ever saw on that debate. I mean, frightening. So anyway, and it wasn't just her look. I mean, it was her, you know, her complete and utter demeanor. Anyway, so folks. What do you got there, my Donna?
Americans lose $17 billion in retirement savings each year. When you pay a financial advisor to help you invest your hard-earned retirement savings, you would assume that they would be required by law to have your best interests at heart. But because of loopholes in the rules, advisors can get away with not only putting their own financial interests above that of their clients, but also allows them to take incentives from Wall Street firms to recommend investments that drain funds from ordinary Americans' retirement accounts through hidden fees and lower returns. The White House Council of Economic Advisors said that this costs us $17 billion a year. So let's see what else is on that one.
Here's one. Hey, you want to finish one out?
Yeah, just let me finish that. This is a cute little graphic of a nest egg. When you pay, okay, the Labor Department is currently considering revising the rules for financial advisors and taking comments from the public. Tell them now to fix loopholes and make sure that financial advisors put their needs of their clients ahead of those of Wall Street and themselves. The Obama administration today took the first steps. This is what they wrote in the past. The Obama administration today took the first steps to close the loophole in the rules that govern Wall Street brokers and financial firms that provide retirement investment advice. That loophole can drain away thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars of hard-earned savings from single retirement accounts. The retirement advice loophole allows Wall Street brokers and financial firms with major conflicts of interest to provide investment advice that serves their own interests instead of what's best for their clients. Obama ordered the U.S. Department of Labor to submit a proposed rule to strengthen financial advisors' fiduciary responsibilities and crack down on these practices. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumker said the new rules are long overdue and a good first step. Under current rules, he said, Wall Street firms can create and distribute investment products to elevate a financial advisor's paycheck over the best interests of workers and retirees. For example, they can sell financial products that pay a large commission but hurt their clients with unnecessary fees, poor returns, or excessive risk. Millions of Americans are affected by this loophole every year without even knowing it. Right now, some advisors are required to put their customers' interests first while others are not, and it is often extremely difficult for workers and retirees to know which type of advisor they are dealing with.
Here's one that's kind of funny. Chris Christie orders New Jersey National Guard leader to lose weight or else.
Or else what? He'll eat all his donuts?
He'll eat his donuts, I guess. Just imagine for a moment being told you need to lose weight by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Well, That is a situation that Air Force General Brigadier General Michael Cunniff finds himself in this week after he reportedly ignores orders from the Pentagon to attend physical fitness tests and get his weight under control. Christie has given Cunniff, who leads the New Jersey National Guard, 90 days to meet the U.S. military fitness requirements. 90 days. He's going to lose 100 pounds in 90 days? Don't think so. The governor has expressed...
He's going to help him, I said, by eating his donuts.
The governor has expressed directly to the general that his failure to meet the standard or to provide notification of his formal reprimand is both unacceptable and disappointing. Well, Christie spokesperson Kevin Roberts said a statement to ABC News. The governor has directed General Cunniff to meet his obligations in the next 90 days.
Yeah.
All right. Chris Christie has not said that the consequences will be if he does not happen in time. In a statement of his own, Cunniff vowed to take action to meet this goal. Many people struggle with weight control. I am not immune from this. Just as I afford every opportunity to each soldier and airman to meet the standards, so will I. I take this matter seriously, and I'm taking the necessary steps to remedy it. I notice he doesn't say that. Christie's a fat pig himself and has no right talking that way to him. What do you think?
Yep.
I mean, kettle calling the kettle black. That's the problem with Christie. He's such a hypocritical piece of work.
You got that right.
He is such a hypocritical piece of work. But so are all these others. I mean, nobody's more hypocritical than Hillary, okay, or Carly, you know. I mean, or any of these crazy people, man. They're all nuts, right? And they're all, so I can't deal with them anymore. It's really hard to deal with these people. I mean, just one thing that happens when you do a show like this is you see most of this stuff and you really. You know, it really just eats you away because when you see the hypocrisy of these people, but more so than you see that people that actually vote for these guys, people that put them in office, people that love these guys. I mean, what the hell? It's just beyond me how anybody can say this. But I don't know. Iranian president, death to America, chants not directed at American people. All right.
Well, who are they directed at?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. They're saying that, this is the Ayatollah is saying that, it's not for real. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani addressed the death to America threats that are often chanted by Iranians, telling 60 Minutes in an interview that the slogan is not directed towards Americans nor meant to be against them.
Oh, really?
Death to America, right?
All right.
Now, people respect the American people. Oh, yeah, sure you do. Ronnie told host Steve Kroft in a preview clip already ahead of Sunday's show. The Iranian people are not looking for war with any country, but at the same time, the policies of the United States have been against the national interest of the Iranian people. It's understandable that people will demonstrate sensitivity to this issue. And Rouhani also invokes some history pertaining to the Iranian Revolution in the late 70s, during which the U.S. supported the Shah, who was eventually overthrown by the Iranian people. Well, they got a good point there. I mean, I can understand the Iranian problem because they hate America because it's been such a belligerent.
That's a thorn in their side.
Oh, my God. I mean, they not just that, they're. You know, everything they do is, all Iran is doing is trying to protect itself and its interests, just like we are, all right? But unfortunately, I mean, Iran has not attacked anybody, all right?
Not as far as I know.
They get attacked, they would attack anybody, all right? So, when the people rose up against the Shah, the United States aggressively supported the Shah until the last moments, he added. In the 8-year war with Iraq, the Americans supported Saddam. And people will not forget these things. We cannot forget the past, but at the same time, our gaze must be towards the future. And not only did the United States support Saddam, but we gave him chemical weapons, okay, that he used against the. You know, there was over 1 million people killed in that war.
Oh, my God.
Over a million.
The interview was Rouhani's first with Western journalists since the U.S. and other major powers agreed to a nuclear deal with Iran that, among other things, would place restrictions on Iran's nuclear program in exchange for lifting the crippling sanctions. Senate Republicans failed on Thursday to get enough votes in favor of an amendment requiring Iran to recognize Israel as a state and release American prisoners in Iran in a last-ditch effort to derail the agreement.
Well,
want to play that and see what he says? We have a little audio piece here.
I don't
here.
Know how long it's going to be, though. Not coming up. The reason is it's CBS News, you know, so let's...
that's too bad.
So
here, let's talk a little bit about the recession. Years after the official end of the recent recession, America's still in a jobs crisis. Although the job growth is slowly picking up steam with steady private sector jobs increase, we still have a long way to go. Job losses came on top of decades of inadequate job growth, wage stagnation, and growing inequality. The U.S. economy is increasingly imbalanced, with the top 1% holding more than 40% of the nation's wealth. The AFL-CIO is ready to work with anyone, business, government, investors, who want to create good jobs and help restore America's middle class and challenge policies that stand in the way of giving America the chance to go back to work. The union movement is partnering with such organizations as the Clinton Global Initiative to find innovative ways to create good jobs that support workers and their families.
Yeah.
Okay. Rising wages, the standard of for the 2016 presidency. Let's see what this says. No, an error occurred. Can't get it. Okay, what do you have there, Leo?
Oh, well, I don't know, just, you know, I kind of looks, I have issues with so many of these things, and I'm reluctant to bring some of these articles up because they, you know, I don't know.
Okay, here's some statistics. In the last decade, more than 50,000 manufacturing facilities have closed. 6 million manufacturing jobs have been lost, and the U.S. trade deficit has grown. While the largest U.S. non-financial corporation sat on a record $1 trillion in cash instead of using it to create jobs. Tech jobs, 2235246, to receive updates and ways to take action from the AFL-CIO to bring jobs home. Here's the real scoop. Here's what went wrong, how to fix it. With four infographics and analysis, we break down what went wrong with the economy and how to fix it. Okay. Let's see. Here it is, Leo. We had the collapse of the real estate, right?
The real estate.
What went wrong? The short answer is we're still recovering from the crash of 2008. More than $12 trillion in household wealth disappeared in 2008 with the real estate crash.
Yep.
Because if your house was valued at $300,000, then it got valued at $100,000 or $200,000, you lost that much money and you just count that over.
Well, that and all the foreclosures, too. We forget all the foreclosures. You know, people were buying these homes in the 80s and the early 90s.
And they paid a lot of money.
They paid a lot for them. And the massive foreclosures that came about then were...
We had the biggest job loss since the Great Depression, including unprecedented public sector layoffs.
Yep.
There was a foreclosure crisis. Oh, boy.
Oh, you lost them?
Yeah, I'm having trouble with this. It's just not working correctly. Oh, there it is. There was the foreclosure crisis, as Leo was talking about. Nearly one-third of mortgages are underwater. Stagnant wages.
It was over 5 million. Just in 2008, there were over 5 million foreclosures in this country. And that escalated every year afterwards. And until,
So there were stagnant wages. People didn't get any more. And here's the cycle. Not enough hiring, therefore not enough consumer spending, not enough business sales, not enough business investment, and it's a big cycle.
And it closed all the businesses, and everything just kept going.
That's why when Republicans say, oh, we don't want to raise the minimum wage, it's like shooting yourself in the foot.
Oh, absolutely.
That's all you can say is, and expecting to run.
But the Republicans really have no idea of what the hell they're doing. That's why,
the people at the top have an idea what they're doing. It's these minions at the bottom, these politicians that don't know what they're talking about.
But here's this is funny. I don't know if I like this guy or not, but yeah, at least he stands up for working
for something,
people.
Yeah.
Bernie slams corporate America and the golden calf on Senate floor. From GOP was appalled. let's see. He says Bernie Sanders. This is today. Bernie Sanders did not let a moment pass after Pope Francis arrived in the United States before he took to the Senate floor and praised the Pope for his defense of working men and women. Presidential candidate Bernie Sanders expressed that the Pope should be praised for speaking out with courage and brilliance about some of the most important issues facing our world. Well, Sanders quoted many of Pope Francis's ideas, such as we have created new idols. The worship of the golden calf of old has found a new and heartless image in the cult of money and the dictatorship of an economy, which is faceless and lacking any truly humane goal. I think the Pope is right in saying that is not something that we should be doing, Sanders said. And Sanders continued today, everything comes under the laws of competition and the survival of the fittest, where the powerful feed upon the powerless. As a consequence, masses of people find themselves excluded and marginalized, without work, without possibilities, without any means of escape. If you are poor, if you are unemployed, if you are hungry, government turns its back on you. But if you are rich and you are powerful, and if you can make campaign contributions of hundreds of millions of dollars, we love you. We welcome you. We need you more and more. And for some more on this article, we can read how Bernie Sanders greeted Pope Francis. Economic issues are moral issues. There's a clip on him.
Oh, okay, that should be interesting.
About 10 minutes, yeah. Let's listen.
Ring of Fire.
But Liberty University is the home of Jerry Falwell, and now I should say Jerry Falwell Jr. But Liberty University is a nonprofit Christian university. It is located in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Don't necessarily have the same ideas.
That's a lot of bullshit. This is a conservative Christian college that Sanders went to. I saw this on CNN. It wasn't very good.
Oh, okay.
Not very good at all. So, but anyway, let's move on. So Bernie's out there, and Bernie's Bernie, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the economy.
Colbert is feeling the burn. Bernie Sanders continues to rise.
We're still recovering from the crash of 2008. The long answer is there was obviously something wrong with the economy long before the crash of 2008. There were obvious warning signs during the Bush years that should have set off alarm bells. Most importantly, wages and middle-class family incomes were dead in the water. The median income for working families started falling in 2000, and never recovered during the 2001-2007 recovery. But virtually every measure, the economic expansion of 2001 to 2007 was the weakest on record since World War II. The Bush expansion ranked dead last in terms of growth in wages and salaries. It was the first and only expansion on record in which an employment rate actually declined. But if the U.S. economy was so unsound during the Bush years, why didn't more people notice the cracks? The answer is the fundamental weakness of the economy was papered over temporarily by the bubble in real estate prices for both residential and commercial real estate. It was a speculation bubble. The bubble allowed families to maintain standards of living by borrowing against the value of their homes and going deeper in debt. But this is not a sustainable situation. As wages and family income stagnated, household debt rose from $7 trillion to $14 trillion, its highest share of the economy since 1929.
Here's one on Scott Walker, by the way.
Okay, just let me finish up. The real estate bubble masked the fundamental weakness of the Bush economy. The question still remains, why was the U.S. economy so weak in the first place?
Okay.
Go ahead, you had something.
Okay. Did Scott Walker bow out because people don't hate unions as much as he thought? This is from ASME Union. Actually, it was pushed out by, or sent to me by them. And it says, In this Survivor season of a Republican primary campaign, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker Monday became the second contender to depart the presidential island. Much has been written about the flubs and funding problems that took him from putative
front runner.
Have you ever heard of putative? No. I've never heard of that word either.
To shark bait in the span of weeks. Let me look it up.
Putative. That's a good one. They were certainly sufficient to tank a campaign. And perhaps they do tell us a lot about Scott Walker, the politician, but that does his short-lived run tell us about viewers, the American electorate? Here's one lesson that one might draw. This guy writes weird. The Walker signature policy accomplishment, fighting unions, didn't resonate as much with Republican primary voters as
well,
it had.
Putative means generally considered to be.
Putative.
Like he's the putative father of that boy.
Oh.
Meaning he's supposed, instead of saying supposed to, you could use the word
putative, which nobody in the world knows what that
so
means.
So you could replace it with supposed to.
I mean, Lila and I read a lot and see a lot, but that's the first time I've ever seen that word used in anywhere.
Because it's from?
Putative.
It's from the Middle French.
Oh, figures. This guy
from Latin, late Latin.
Who knows?
It means supposed.
Okay. Well,
he's supposed to be. He was supposed to be the front runner.
This guy is like William Buckley. He needs to use a... $100 words when a dollar word would be better. But anyway, here's one lesson that one might draw. What Walker's signature policy accomplishment, fighting unions, didn't resonate as much with Republican primary voters as it had with the conservative intelligentsia and Wisconsinites who voted him back in twice after he crushed government workers' ability to collectively bargain. I could never understand it. The idiots in Wisconsin. But Walker did double down at that message, coming out with a plan last week describing how he would cripple the power of organized labor across the country, just as he had in his home state. He even said that his triumph over teachers and government bureaucrats equipped him to take on the Islamic State. Whether that bolstered his foreign policy credentials is debatable, but the strategy ran counter to new polling that showed rising support for unions, even among Republicans, fully half of whom approve of them.
Uh-huh.
Only half. The rest of the field seemed to agree. Aside from the occasional swipe at teachers' unions, few candidates followed Walker in his union bashing as eagerly as they copied Donald Trump's attacks on immigrants in China. Trump is a union member himself, drawing a six-figure pension from the Screen Actors Guild, and has long had a working relationship with labor at his many unionized hotels. So his hotels are unionized. So is the Walker implosion a sign that voters aren't buying the anti-union message? That's certainly the interpretation that unions are broadcasting in their celebration of his exit. This is a clear rebuke of the anti-worker platform on which Governor Walker based his entire presidential campaign, said Lee Saunders, the president of the American Federation of State, of the AFL, SCIO. And Governor Walker found nearly zero support for his policies that would have tipped the scales even further against working families. It may also, however, be a sign that voters are just complicated and fickle. And after that, after all, the candidate who surged in polling after last week's debate while Walker fizzled, Carly Farina, is not necessarily a better friend of unions. She turned her mass layoffs at Hewlett-Packard into evidence of her ability to make tough choices when the chips are down. Also, it may be that unions just aren't seen as much of a powerful enemy on the national stage as they can be in some states, where politicians have blamed budget problems on the rising cost of public employee pensions. Targeting unions may still work on the local level, where some important labor policy is made. The Michigan-based Mackinac Center, which has pushed right-to-work laws, has found that the few politicians have been punished for supporting measures that curtail the powers of the unions. Mackinac still sees a future for governors, for the governor who epitomized its ideals. The opportunity now for most Republican candidates is to pick up Walker's mantle, look at the Labor Party plan that he released last week, and look at possibly a Walker secretary. Oh, my God. Can you imagine a Walker secretary of labor? Vincent Bernucci.
I would think he'd be a bit adversarial, wouldn't you?
Adversarial? My God. It would be a heck of a confirmation hearing. I guess it would, yeah. Unless somebody assassinates Donald Trump, all right, which would be somebody in the Republican Party, or maybe Hillary. She's killed people before. God, he will be our next president. I think he will. All right. I think a lot of people like them. A lot of people hate people like Scott Walker. They hate people like Hillary.
Well,
they hate people. Scott, they hate these people that are just so big,
just
big,
let me say
bad
something.
People. Oh.
Scott Walker is just a paid mouthpiece. That's
yeah.
all he is.
Yeah.
He's uneducated and ignorant.
He is, and
he just does what he's told.
And he's
a
paid for
puppet.
He was a Coke boy, and he's always been a Coke brothers, creation. Okay, they were the ones that backed him. Now they realize, they're wasting their money. Because nobody likes the guy.
Yeah.
And he's too dumb to run. So anyway, stop the university and banning criticism of Israel. What? No. I'll read that another time.
Did we get any...
I'm just trying to say what... Did we get what?
I was going to ask if you had anything sent by anybody on some of the other candidates.
No, not really. There's only about a handful
mm-hmm.
of candidates that are getting anything.
And Jim Webb, whom we liked a lot.
I don't like Jim anymore. He just bombarded me today with a bunch of stuff, but he's so milquetoast. He's a milquetoast. He doesn't have any charisma. He doesn't have any, nobody's paying any attention to his campaign, because he's not aggressive enough, and he's not making the right statements, okay? And people like Sanders is stealing stuff from Jim Webb's campaign.
Huh.
The, you know, his prison reform and his this reform and that reform. Those were all originally put out by Jim Webb. But, you know, and he excited me at that time when I saw his new stuff. But now he's just kind of a milquetoast. You know, he's weak. He's just not getting any. What can I say? He's getting no real support anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I can see. You know,
mm-hmm.
And
he's not attracted any big donors that we know.
No, I can see none. Yeah, not really. No, he's not attracting any kind of news.
Mm-hmm.
From anywhere.
I think he lacks charisma when he speaks.
Yeah, very,
I think that's
very,
what the problem is.
He's, well, not just that. He took too long to get into the race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now that he is in the race, he's not getting any kind of, you know, thought. He's not. He should be bashing all the candidates.
Uh-huh.
Like all the candidates are bashing each other. He's not really. You know, he's just kind of like laid back. You know, and you know, right now you got to be aggressive. Maybe if he gets into the debate, maybe, okay, in October,
something.
He might gain some ground. But, boy, I'll tell you, he's really lackluster right now.
Yeah, it's kind of a long time to wait till October to hear anything.
Yeah, you know, he's putting it out there, but nobody's
covering. Well, it's like Joe Biden, he's thinking about it. Well, either, you know, Fisher could bait Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want Joe Biden. I think he sucks as a VP. He sucks it as a senator, he's a terrible candidate. You know?
I wouldn't.
That's why he lost. What for the last three times he ran?
Yeah.
All right. And nobody wants that guy.
He's a Fisher Cup pig. You're running or you're not.
Yeah, everybody.
My
son died. I'm not gonna do it. I feel like running, but I'm too sad, and I don't think I'm going to be. But I want to be, but I can't be. I mean, that's Joe Biden.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what the hell? You know, who needs him? Nobody needs that guy. All right? Get out of here. Now, politics is a tough game. Get out. You know? So, I wanted to read this thing about what Jimmy Carter said. Yeah, about U.S. oligarchy and corrupting power of money and
that
politics.
Would be interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I wish he had it on audio so we could listen to it.
Yeah.
Oh, he does? No.
No. Says, spoke with Oprah Winfrey just before the 91-year-old announced in August that he would be undergoing treatment for surgery.
Yeah.
But commenting on the political landscape now 6 years after the U.S. Supreme Court, a Citizens United ruling, former U.S. Jimmy Carter, president, laments that Washington, D.C. has become corrupted by the influence of money. We've become now an oligarchy instead of a democracy. Carter told Oprah Winfrey in an interview excerpt released on Tuesday, I think that that's been the worst damage to the basic morale and ethical standards of the American political system that I've ever seen in my life.
What's that?
The Citizens United.
Citizens United.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when asked if he would be able to become president today, the Nobel Peace Prize winner answered, absolutely not.
No.
Says that there's no way now for you to get a Democratic or Republican nomination without being able to raise $200 or $300 million or more. Carter continued, I would not be inclined to do that, and I would not be capable of doing it, he added.
The current presidential campaign
yeah.
has seen an unprecedented amount of money flow into both the candidates' own coffers as well into their super PACs that support them. What's more, this tidal wave of cash is coming from a handful of the nation's wealthiest donors. Reportedly, half of the $388 million contributed so far to campaigns on both sides of the spectrum came from fewer than 400 families, with 62 donors giving at least $1 million.
Oh my God.
Carter's interview, which will be aired on September 27th on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday program, was reportedly taped just before the 91-year-old announced last month that he would be undergoing treatment for stage 4 melanoma. Oh.
Yeah. I think there's a... this isn't the whole interview, but I think it's part of it.
There he is.
It's interesting that Oprah got him, but nobody else will talk to him.
Huh.
Überlegene Technik. Okay. They got you one way or the other.
Well, just skip that and go on.
I can't. Can't skip it.
Well, just
you gotta put stupid commercials.
Can you just turn it down, and then we can when it goes off, then we can. I really want to play that.
Me too, but unfortunately.
Konkurrenzlose Leistung.
You gotta go through this.
Ein Auto will sich der Autobahn. Einen Moment.
There we go. Okay, you don't have to listen to a German Autobahn commercial, all right? But it's really interesting because...
Why do you think Oprah was able to get him?
Oh, I mean, he's available for interviews. It's just that nobody wants to talk to him because he's anti-Zion, he's anti-Israel, all right? He wants Israel to wake the hell up, you know? Not wake up, but he wants justice for...
turn that up.
Oh, this is nothing.
Oh.
And this is just a bunch of...
commercial, too.
Yeah.
Long commercial.
Commercial of her show.
It's coming up in a minute. Well, she's going to have Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. That's okay. But it's not on there, so... Yeah. So anyway, it was good. He won't let anything keep him from teaching God's word. This is President Carter. Every single movie that Jimmy Carter watched at the White House... Every single movie was in it. Ronald Reagan is known as the movie junkie president. He was, after all, an actor before getting into it. But I guess Carter watched a lot of movies in the White House.
Huh. Well, they can't go out or anywhere, so I guess they're kind of captive in there.
Now, the other thing, Carter urges Germany to take the lead in migrant crisis. Yeah, not the U.S. We don't want any more. But I just think that's funny. Masterclass. So let's see. That's about it on this end here. Let's see. Oh, FBI report says Americans are less violent than ever, except for police. Interesting, huh?
Which are more violent.
The police are more violent than the people.
Overreaction to...
I don't know about that. Here in Connecticut, we've had, I don't know how many... We've had way over 100 murders.
Oh yeah.
Just in Hartford alone, I think. Yeah, Hartford.
Seems like
it's Bridgeport.
Every day.
There's at least one or two more murders every day, and just in this state, I can imagine.
And that's
50 states. Yeah.
And they're saying that Americans are less violent. I guess they didn't really report on it before.
Right.
It's kind of a scary thought.
Well, violence among citizens has dropped. Violence against citizens carried out by police has been rising sharply. According to new FBI statistics released this week, violent crime rates in the U.S. fell over 4% in the last year alone, bringing the amount of violent crimes lower than it has been in nearly 40 years. I can't believe that. The statistics showed that there are an estimated 1.16 million violent crimes in the year of 2013. Which is the lowest number since 1978, when 109 million were recorded. Okay, broken down, the report revealed that manslaughter dropped 4.4% to 14,196, the lowest rate since 1968. Okay, but
well,
I think they're probably on the rise because the last this report was dated 2013. Done in 2013, which was 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So maybe they didn't take Connecticut into consideration.
Hey, well, I guess not.
We had some serious lots of murders up in Connecticut.
Yeah, but compared to other places, probably not.
Probably as many. Chicago is the highest, I guess. But the study also
all
found
the large cities suffered.
That there was a drop
crime, right?
In the amount of prisoners in 32 of the 50 states. While prisoner imprisonment continues to rise in the other 18 states. That's interesting. California shows the largest drop in crime and imprisonment over the last 5 years, which is likely connected to lighter drug penalties that have been adopted in recent years. Even among those who are technically guilty of breaking some law, a vast majority of prisoners are nonviolent offenders who don't belong in prison to begin with. And according to some statistics, nonviolent offenders make up nearly 70% of the prison population. Many of these people are not guilty of any transgressions, and they are in fact themselves victims of state violence.
Interesting.
Well, violence among citizens has dropped. Violence against citizens carried out by police has been rising sharply. According to the FBI annual uniform crime report, 461 felony suspects were shot by police last year, which is the highest number since in decades. These numbers are likely unreported as well and only include felony suspects, so it's possible that this figure is much higher than the study suggests. Another interesting angle is that in the same time period, gun sales soared across the country, which seems to support the idea that more people owning guns actually contributes to making a society a safer place. According to a Congressional Research Service research report, covered by the number of private-owned firearms in America increased from 192 million in 1994 to 310 million in 2009, and has continued to increase every year. You hear that?
Yep.
310 million guns in this state, and that's like one for every person in this country.
I know. I just don't like it.
But it's increased by over 100 million. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing because it shows that crime has gone down because people are afraid that another guy may have a gun, you know, and may shoot him. Right? And that does happen. And I wouldn't put it past, you know. So anyway, that's the thought. That's one of the thoughts. Okay. Race and ethnicity. Let's see what we have here. Native American student told to leave school for wearing traditional Mohawk hairstyle. It's interesting how, you know, Seattle cop arrested black man for having a golf club. Now says he's a victim of reverse discrimination. Oh, that's joker. A black guy had a golf club in his hand. And a cop arrests him. Crazy. U.S. must return all stolen land to Native tribes in order to end police brutality and racism. Okay, alrighty. Racist police chief says black people are like monkeys. Oh, my God. An Oregon police chief has been exposed for making outrageous racist remarks about African Americans.
Huh.
The chief was formerly described both those with department and many in the community as a good cop. Decorated, Clatskanie police chief Marvin Hoover, 56, has been placed on paid administrative leave since early August. It feels disgusting, to be honest with you, said a local resident. Maryland, first state to ban cops from all racist and discriminatory for profiling. That's fascinating. The state of Maryland recently took a deep step in confronting racial profiling and discriminatory stops by police officers. On August 25th, 2015, State Attorney General Brian Frosch released a statement of new policy guidelines that spell out for the first time that police officers may not in any way use discriminatory decisions about the appearance of an individual as guidance when making an arrest. History teacher denies Native American genocide. Native students disagrees and gets expelled. Oh, that's great. A Native American student at Cal State Sacramento University was told by her history teacher that there was no genocide against the indigenous population of North America. What a stupid professor that is. Okay. When the student Chitanyiba Johnson took issue with this claim and challenged him. He was ejected. She was ejected from the class and expelled. The professor said she didn't care for the said he didn't care for the term genocide as he didn't. These people would do that. Genocide says he didn't think it accurately described what happened in relationship to the American. I mean, this guy's a history professor, and you're going to talk about revisionism. Holy crap! Right? U.S. history professor Maury Wiseman, that explains it. Okay, accused Johnson of hijacking his class when she challenged him on this. He also pointed out that he was very offended by her accusations that he was a bigot and a racist. The professor canceled class for the rest of the day and apologized to the 19-year-old sophomore's disruption. By the end of the week, he had expelled her from the class, according to written by Indian Country Today Media Network. The whole thing started on Wednesday, Johnson said in an interview. He was talking about Native America, and he said the word genocide. He paused and said, I don't like to use that word because I think it's too strong for what really happened. And genocide implies that it was on purpose and most Native people were wiped out by European diseases. Well, the guy, you know, I hate to say this, but the guy's name is Wiseman, all right? And he denies the genocide of the Palestinian people. I guess the only people in the world that were ever had any genocide against them were the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Poor Jews. Well, you know, the Palestinians are being desecrated and destroyed, all right, murdered, genocide by the Zionists, all right, Israel. You know, the United States decimated the native population, okay, through genocide. These people, these professors are criminal in their intent, in their revisionist history. And I praise this girl for standing up to him on that, even though, you know, she should sue him. She should sue him, you know, for expelling her from her class.
Mm-hmm.
She should. Sue him for $1 million. See how fast he accepts genocide as a word. Ah, prick. I wrote it down. I was engaged for what I felt were obvious reasons, she said.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything on Wednesday because I knew that if I didn't have anything specific to back it up in terms of tangible or solid evidence, that he would not take my comments into consideration. But on Friday, after the teacher's discussion on the Iroquois Confederacy and the Portuguese expeditions, she confronted him. She had no other choice. He made it a point to say indigenous people were not peaceful. I was upset for obvious reasons, she said. He mentioned how the French and Dutch were allies and made it a point to say native people were killing each other before white settlers arrived. And Schilling notes that Johnson says that she understands that there were native conflicts before settlers arrived. But when the professor talked about the bravery of Portuguese expeditions without emphasis on the slave trade, she again grew upset. All right. This guy was such a twisted crapper. He should be fired. He should be fired as a, you know, what's his name? His name was Maury Wiseman. I would write a letter to this the president and say this guy deserves the worst. Get rid of him. You know, can't be trusted under any circumstances as a professor of history. God. What do you think, Lila? Huh?
Okay.
Yeah, you like this guy, Maury Wiseman. Do you think he makes any sense as a history professor?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
He's saying that there was no genocide? He's saying the Portuguese...
Well, I don't know where he read his history, do you?
I think he's an idiot.
Where did he study?
Probably, Israeli U. Right?
Something.
Yeah, or some other.
Where
is
this? Where is this guy? Where is
college.
This guy a professor?
I just.
Where did they say? I didn't remember what he said.
He was in California, I think.
Okay.
I just had it. Let me see if I can go back.
Part of the state system in California,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I just had it, but I can't remember what state it was. Yeah. Anyway.
A man amazing that he would even get reported on.
Yeah, that and that he could actually expel her, that he had the authority to expel her. Yeah, geez, that's so disgusting. It just really is so disgusting. I can't.
Well, on one of the ads, you can find out if you come from royal blood. Did you see that? In your spare time, folks, if this stuff disgusts you and you don't want to even do it, you can
check out your,
respond to see whether you have royal blood.
Ancestry.com.
How to respond when someone calls?
I don't like
Colin. I don't like
Colin
Powell.
You can't trust him for anything. I mean, you can't trust him for anything. Colin Powell was the biggest lying crook that we ever had, and as a next to Hillary. I gotta say, I think Hillary might be worse than he was.
Only time will tell.
But only time will tell. Mm-hmm. Hillary didn't get us into a war, I don't think. Maybe
that we know of.
Conflicts, but not that. He actually got us into a war.
And then get up there
and lied like
lied like a son of
a.
Oh, boy, I couldn't believe how that man lied.
No, it was part of the Bush administration was to lie. That was lie. Everybody lied. Here's a good one. Last few minutes. Here's a graphic picture of the Berlin Wall versus the Palestine Wall. The Berlin Wall was small in comparison to this Palestinian Wall. It's like twice the size of the Berlin Wall. Twice the size.
Amazing,
longer. Yeah, amazing. It's unbelievable. But, anyway.
So I think that's just about it. Not too much more.
No, that's about it. We're only a few minutes. We must end for profits prison.
I agree with that.
I agree with that. Let's read that. And I think the unions will appreciate that because AFSCME is, they work for the public.
Mm-hmm.
The public prisons have AFSCME.
The United States is experiencing a major human tragedy. We have more people in jail than any other country on earth, including communist China, an authoritarian country four times our size. The U.S. has less than 5% of the world's population, yet we incarcerate about a quarter of its prisoners, some 2.2 million people. There are many ways that we must go forward to address this tragedy. One of them is to end the existence of private for-profit prison industry, which now makes millions from the incarceration of Americans. These private prisons interfere with the administration of justice, and they're driving inmate populations skyward by corrupting the political process. No one, in my view, should be allowed to profit from putting more people behind bars, whether they are inmates in jail or immigrants held in detention centers. In fact, I believe that private prisons shouldn't be allowed to exist at all, which is why I've introduced legislation to eliminate them.
This is by Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I agree with him 100%.
But
Jim Webb probably said that originally because that was part
of
his.
Well, he said something different too. And not only did he want to reform that prison reform, but he also wanted to give people a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to nullify their nonviolent, because what happens is when people come out of prison, they're not allowed to.
They have great difficulty getting jobs.
And
no one will hire them.
Not only will they not hire them, but they can't even vote.
They can't find a decent place to live because they're not allowed to live in public housing.
That's right. So, there you go, folks. So that's why you need this kind of thing for prison. For-profit prisons harm minorities, which is true. For-profit prisons abuse prisoners. Rat-infested food was served to inmates who had a private vendor in Michigan. Privately run prisons in Mississippi reportedly have 2 to 3 times the rate of violent assault as publicly run facilities.
Mm-hmm.
A private prison vendor has reportedly used juvenile offenders in Florida to subdue other young prisoners. It's the Lord of the Flies, said Broward County's chief assistant public defender. The children are used by staff members to inflict harm on other children. Nurses at a private prison chain in California threatened to strike over the inadequate health care, which one described as unsafe, and there have even been reported incidents of patient abuse. And for-profit prisons victimize immigrants. For-profit prisons profit from abuse and mistreatment. Prison industry money is corrupting the political process. And for-profit prisons are influencing prison policy and immigration policy.
Not a good idea.
No. And California Correction Authority spent $10.5 million in quarters where they lobbied on issues related to immigrant detention. This was just the prison people. They wanted, you know, the prison people spent $10,000 in lobbying just in California to keep immigration detention for illegal immigrants. And not for-profit companies exploit prison families. Oh, they do with the damn the telephones.
Yeah. Oh, they bombard you.
They charge $1 a minute for families and friends to speak with their loved ones in prison. There is no free market, no competition to drive the price down. If families or friends are unable to afford global telelinks prices, prisoners may run a higher risk of social isolation. It's a vicious circle, and studies show that the social connections are key to a prisoner's rehabilitation. Right? And, you know, they're just milking everything, these guys. These miserable, miserable people that run these prisons.
Well, I hope they all get closed down. I think
I don't know. I think with somebody like Sanders in there, Jim Webb was in the Senate.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I think enough people are criticizing the policy.
I think so. I really do. And with that, we're going to end the show tonight. And I want to thank everybody who joined us. And we wish you the very best. Okay. And good night.
Good night, folks.